Hello, friends, and welcome to the Nugget Climbing Podcast. This is your host, Stephen Dimmitt. I am very excited about today's guest. My guest today is Stefano Gisolfi. Stefano is a 31-year-old professional rock climber from Italy. This guy is one of the titans of our sport. He's in the top three or four or five people in the world when it comes to sport climbing. He's done some of the hardest routes in the world. At the time of this recording, Stefano has climbed four routes rated 515C or French 9B+, including his own first ascent of Excalibur, which he did last year. We talked about that in this interview. He is currently training to try to qualify for the Olympics, and he has been trying Adam Ondra's route Silence, the first 9C in the world, for several seasons now, and it was really fun to talk to him about that as well. I really loved talking to Stefano. He's really inspiring, and he just seems like a really genuine good guy. We had some fun. We had some laughs. He told some great stories. I think you guys will really enjoy this one. So without further ado, let's dive in. Please enjoy Stefano Gisolfi. Stefano, it's great to meet you. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm really looking forward to getting to know some different sides of you. I've followed your YouTube channel for quite a long time. And so I feel like I know current Stefano quite well. And I've gotten to know old Stefano a little bit as well. He's made some appearances on your YouTube channel. But I thought we could start by getting to know young Stefano. I would love to hear a little bit about what you were like as a kid. I don't know much about your upbringing. You were born in Turin, Italy. Is that right?
Yeah, it's right. I was born in Turin. It is a relatively big city, so there was not much climbing in the city. But my parents are not climbers, and my father is actually a mountain bike teacher. So I started with sports on a mountain bike. When I was 6 years old, I took part in my first competition. It was a biking competition. And then for a few years, I rode a bike. I just went around Italy to do some competition for kids. And so I've been competing for a long time, actually, but not in climbing. I didn't start with climbing. And I actually tried climbing for the very first time when I was 11, after a biking competition. Some friend of mine took me to try a climbing wall on a dam in Aosta Valley, quite close to Turin. And so for the first time, I experienced climbing, and I immediately fell in love with the sport. And I actually didn't know it was even a sport. I just heard something about sport climbing, but I thought it was something like extreme sport that some like crazy dudes are doing on the mountains. But then I figured out it was like a normal sport, and I wanted to continue climbing. I was interested in keep climbing, and so I found a beginner course in a local gym. There was just one at the time. It was 20 years ago, in 2004, actually.
Wow.
And there was, like, now there are many gyms, but at the time there was just one. So I started in this local gym, beginner's course for kids. I was 11. And I fell in love, and I never stopped.
Why did you love climbing so much right away? Was it because you were good at it? Were you naturally good at it from the start? Or was it something else about it? Do you remember why you fell in love with it so quickly?
Actually, I remember when I was even younger, I always climbed everything in the park. I used to climb road signs, walls, but just as a game. I used to play a lot with this stuff. And so when then I found climbing, I was already good at it, because it was always... I was always like training on those things, even without actually climbing. So I was good at it even from the first time, and it felt something that was natural to me. It was totally natural, and like after just 1 month after I started climbing, there was this local competition and I took part in it. It was for kids. So it was promotional competition, nothing really serious. And I didn't even have time to buy climbing shoes. So I competed in sneakers and I got second place.
Wow.
And so I understood that I was very good at it and I was having fun because it was like a game for me. It was not like a serious sport at the time.
Did you continue biking at the same time or did climbing replace biking?
I continued for 1 year, maybe a bit more. But then I slowly stopped biking and because like climbing was becoming more serious every time because I took part in this competition. Then there was another one a few weeks later and then there was another one. And so slowly climbing became my main sport, biking my second sport. And then eventually I stopped biking and I still like go biking sometimes, but just for fun.
And what did your dad think of that? Was he sad? Was he excited for you?
No, I think he was excited because he was supporting me in like every biking competition. But then he just was keep supporting me in this other new competition that was like climbing. There were climbing competitions, so. We were just, we because it was me and my sister at the same time, we both went biking and then we both switched to climbing. And so we both switched sports and my father was just supporting us in like first in mountain biking, then in both, and then just climbing. But I don't know if it was sad or not. I think he was happy because we were happy, so I think it was just supporting us for whatever.
And what does he think of your climbing now? I mean, now you've become one of the best climbers in the world. You're trying to go to the Olympics. He must be pretty proud of you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they're both my father and my mother are both proud. And I think my father now realized that it was a good choice to be a climber because I was not very good in biking. I was like coming not on the podiums, even on easy competitions. So I think it was, he thinks now it is a good choice. It was a good choice.
And what did your mom do growing up?
She doesn't do any sports. She was just coming with us biking and supporting us, but she wasn't playing or doing any sports. So like the sport part of my family is from my father and this is what me and my sister inherit from him.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm curious who you got your sense of humor from. That's something I want to dig into. I really enjoy following you on Instagram and on YouTube. And I mean, you're one of the best climbers in the world and you obviously take your climbing very seriously. But it doesn't seem like you take yourself very seriously. I had a lot of fun preparing for this interview because I just stumbled into a lot of funny little gems. Like I just watched an Instagram clip this morning where you were basically doing an advertisement for the Re-Onsite app. Like there's this app on your phone where if you stare on it, it erases your short-term memory and you can try to onsite a route more than once. I was like, that's amazing and hilarious. And then like you know, your Road to Silence films, you're dressed as a caveman, like climbing to try to get a banana at the top of the cliff and all this, you're screaming and you're basically naked wearing a loincloth. And I'm like, this guy's fun. This guy's a character. You know, you don't see that very often. I can't imagine Jakob Schubert doing that, right? Like he always looks very presentable, very cool. I love the guy. He's an amazing guy, an inspiring climber, but seems like you keep things really, really fun and kind of light. Where did that come from? Was that a part of your childhood, laughter and humor and things like that? Where do you think you got that from?
I don't know where it comes from, actually. I think it was something that I always had, even in school or even from my first videos. I always wanted to add something that was a bit different from climbing because I mean, climbing sometimes can get very serious and even like as a professional, for sure, is my life, my passion, and even my job. But I think if we take ourselves too seriously, we can, at some time it can be boring, especially in like in YouTube or Instagram in videos. If we are too serious, then for people that see us, it would be just boring, just like people climbing on like hard stuff on rock. It's interesting for sure, but if we can add something like a joke or something fun, would be better, I think, for me, because I'm having more fun doing stupid stuff, and for even for people watching that are not just watching like hard route or pulling hard or suffering or be frustrated on something for a really long time, even like trying silence. That it is like a hard project, a hard process. If I can add something that it is fun for me and for people that watch me, would be like the process would be easier, because I know that I'm climbing hard, but I can have fun in the day with like at the crag with the friends, and we can film stupid stuff as you like, maybe go with friends and say jokes to each other. I can do it in a video, and would be even better.
Where do those ideas come from? Do you just have kind of a running list in your head of silly things you want to try?
they come, I think, randomly. Maybe when I'm in the bathroom or taking a shower, I think, okay, yeah, maybe I can do this this thing in the next video. And then maybe I talk to my girlfriend Sarah, and sometimes she say, maybe this could be too stupid, and so maybe I try to find something that could be like funny, but maybe not stupid. But then at the end, I think I end up doing everything anyway.
Where did the idea for the dawn of climbing come from? So you shared a clip on Instagram. I think the first time I saw it was like the last, you know, 1 minute of one of your silence videos. You're in Flatanger, mm-hmm. and you're dressed as a caveman, and you throw a banana in the air and it gets stuck on top of a cliff, and then you're climbing it, you're screaming constantly, and it's like, this is how, you know, 8000 BC, this is how climbing came into being. I was like, this is hilarious, and there's no point to it. It's not an advertisement. It's just like such a random thing at the end of a video, and yeah. It's just for fun. Where did that idea come from?
I think that came from both me and the filmmakers that were making the videos, because we were planning to do some episodes on silence, and we thought it would be fun to add something at the end of each episode after the credits, like on a movie that have like end credit scenes. So we thought we could add something, and we were thinking, what can we do? We are in a cave. Maybe we can do something about, I don't know, a caveman that is climbing. But why is climbing? He's climbing because he wants to eat this banana. And so we came up with the whole story. We filmed like a part every now and then. And then we added these little clips at the end of each video. And then at the end we put everything together, and we posted the final video. But like even 1 year after, we did like all the videos. And so if you followed all the silence videos that we make, there's this little story. So people were more entertained to even follow this story, maybe even more than the silence process.
Well, I loved it. You accomplished your goal. It's very entertaining, and I definitely got a kick out of it. And I hope you keep doing stuff like this. It's really, really fun for the rest of us. Does it help your performance to kind of keep things playful and to kind of mix in fun and jokes and things like that? Because, you know, I was watching the Road to Silence again last night, and kind of thinking about what I wanted to talk to you about, and your partner Sarah, there's a quote from her at some point, and you're trying, you know, the first half of Crux One, kind of getting your ass kicked a little bit, and it's hard. You're just up there like trying the same moves over and over again, and she's talking about how you always keep things really light. You always have a really good attitude. She never really sees you get angry or frustrated. does it help to kind of mix in, you know, jokes and some of this playful stuff into kind of your brand, into your image? Does it actually help your performance as well?
Yeah, I think both like the jokes and the funny stuff and the serious videos are helping me to keep be motivated for stuff that could be frustrating sometimes, like the first cracks of silence. I like get my ass kicked multiple times, and if I was just focused on that without any jokes, without any videos, maybe it would be even worse. So I thought maybe having something that is different from just climbing, so even having the goal to do these episodes, these videos, was helping me to try to tell the story. And just the fact that I'm telling the stories, at the end it was, okay, if I succeed, it will be better. If I don't, there will be a good story anyway. And so like the focus was on trying silence, having fun, and climb a lot. And this is what I liked most. I think the best part was that I was doing what I like. I like climbing. I like projecting hard stuff. I like when I find something that seemed impossible at the beginning, and then it becomes naturally easier and easier, and sometimes even possible. And so I like what I'm doing. And so even adding these videos, these jokes, is helping for the whole process. The process is not just climbing, and it's more about telling the story. It's about having fun at the crag. And if I'm having fun at the crag while climbing, and while I'm maybe belaying, or while we're shooting a video, then the whole process will be easier, because it will be lighter and less important even, because at the end of the day, I'm just trying to climb a piece of rock, and it could seem the most important thing in the world, and sometimes it is because it's my job, but at the end of the day, the most important thing is to enjoy the whole process. And if eventually I will succeed, it will be the last part, but the most important thing is enjoy the process. And if I can enjoy the process, then everything will be worth it anyway.
I love that. Yeah. I would love to hear why you were drawn to silence. I love that you had some interviews with Adam Andra in one of your films, and one of the silence films in particular. And he was kind of making a point to say, like, you know, this route looks really weird, and it is really weird. It's strange. It's bizarre. Like, you know, I remember the first time I watched Adam's movie, Silence, when he does the first ascent, first 9C in the world, hardest route in the world. I remember being like, this is so inspiring and so badass. And also, who's going to go try this? I can't imagine anyone else being psyched, because it's, you know, you're going feet first and like toe jamming, and then the crazy drop knee and all that stuff. I know you found some different beta, but no one else is like lining up to try this thing. You know, obviously there's not very many people in the world who are at the level where they can, but he you know, Adam was saying how cool it was that you were brave enough to go and try silence, given how weird it is and kind of how different it is from your normal style. Why did you decide to go try it?
Actually, there were not many choices, because I climbed few of the 90 plus that exist, and I wanted to test myself on something even harder. And the possibilities were silence. It was the only 9C in the world at the time. Because the year before I decided trying silence, I climbed Bibliography. That was the second 9C. And so when then I decided to downgrade Bibliography, was silence was at the time the only 9C in the world, because then DNA came after, and BIG came last year. And so the possibilities were, or I try to climb silence, or I can find something else and try to do a first ascent or something really hard. But this is maybe even harder, because it's not that easy to find something that could be at my limit and can be even harder than what I climbed before. Actually, at the same time, I was trying Excalibur, And so when I tried for the first time Silence, I was in the same time I was trying Excalibur, and I think at the time I was thinking it could even be harder than 9B+. And so, yeah, I actually tried both the possibilities. Tried the only 9C in the world that was already climbed, and tried to freeze something by myself like Excalibur. And yeah, then DNA came, and Project Big was freed. But at the end, I was already stuck in processing, projecting Silence. I was already involved in this project, so this is why I'm keep trying Silence and maybe not switching to other 9C that could even seem similar or closer to my style.
Yeah, that all makes a lot of sense. And I'm curious, it seems like you do really love projecting really hard routes. I was actually, you know, you can't trust everything you see on Wikipedia, but I was looking at your page and I just noticed, like, you know, comparing you to Adam Andra, you've both done 4 9B+'s. He's done 1 9C. You're working on Silence as well. But then if you go down, like Adam's done like 50 9A+'s and, you know, 25 or 24 9Bs or something. And it looks like you've done about the same amount of, you know, you've done like 8 or so 9A+'s and 8 9Bs. And it seems like you really just go after the hardest things you can possibly do. It seems like you really love that process. Why is that? Why do you spend so much time trying the very hardest routes that you can possibly do?
I think it's something that I mentioned before. I like to climb something that at the beginning seems impossible, and then with time and training and like sacrifice, I can eventually climb. If I try some 9As or 9A+, the goal for sure could be to climb the route, but I know I can climb them. Even 9B, I think if it's not like the opposite of my style, I know I can climb any of the 9Bs that I can try sooner or later. Maybe some of the 9Bs can take me longer, or like even the 9A+, I think I can climb a 9A+ in some days, I think. But like something like 9B+ or 9C, I don't know if I will ever climb it. So this is something that I'm psyched about. I'm psyched about trying something that I don't know if I will ever climb, because then when and if I climb it, it will be even a bigger satisfaction. Like I did on Excalibur at the beginning, felt impossible. I didn't know if it was possible to ever climb it. And then at the end, when I climbed it, I was even happier, because it was something that at the very beginning, on the first day, looked impossible to climb. Every move was just too hard. And then I did the moves, then I did the sections, and then I did the route. And I think I'd like to do the same with Silence, because it's something that I don't know if I will ever climb.
How do you feel about Silence now? Like, do you fall in love with a route as you get to know it, as you start working on it and kind of discover the challenges that it has to offer?
Yeah, Silence is even weirder and harder than other routes, also because it's strange. There's like a foot jam, a hand jam, a finger jam. There's something that you don't usually find in a like even 9B+ or hard route. So yeah, at the beginning was frustrating, because it is a lot about this toe jam, and I'm not very expert, and so at the beginning was very frustrating, more than other routes. Like on Bibliography, I was doing the single moves on the first days, and was just a matter of endurance and putting everything together. On Silence is more about learning the moves and learning new skills that I didn't have before. And so it was more intriguing for this reason, because I'm learning, like every time I climb on Silence, I'm learning something, like the body position, the balance, the shoe that I'm trying with. And so it's more complex than a normal climb. And so I'm even more psyched now to try it again. And it's going better and better. If at the beginning I was struggling on this store jam and try to find the betas, now I perfection the beta and I climb. The video is not out yet. It will be in, I think, in a couple of months maybe. But I climbed the whole section of the first cracks. And so this is my biggest goal for the moment that I achieved. And the goal for the next season, that will be probably from August to mid-October, will be to climb the whole route. So I don't know if I'm close or if I will do some attempts from the ground, but I think I'm almost ready to try some sand goals from the ground.
That's awesome, man. That's so exciting. I can't wait to see that film. And for people that haven't seen your Road to Silence series, yeah, you've put quite a lot of time into it already as far as what we've all seen in those videos. I think you linked the top half of Crux 1 all the way to the end of the route. And then you did Move Hard, which is like a variation that climbs into the top of Silence 9B. And it looked like you were getting close on Crux 1. So that's really exciting to hear. How long have you tried Silence total?
I tried it 2 years ago in 2022 for 1 month. Like not all the day, for sure I need some rest days, but I was there for more or less 1 month. Then I had another trip in May last year for a bit less than 1 month. And then another trip a bit more than 1 month in August and September. So in total, I think it could be 3 months between like climbing days and rest days. And so, yeah, it's like 2 seasons, 3 trips. It is becoming a long project. The longest so far, actually.
The longest so far. Yeah, I was going to ask about that. How long did you end up working on Excalibur, just for comparison?
Excalibur was harder to compare because it is close to my home, so I didn't do any trips or something, but I haven't counted the days. I think there were between 25 to 30 climbing days.
Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if it would be like spreading one trip could be like 2 or 3 months, maybe 2 months. Mm-hmm. But I tried like spread between 2021 until last year. So it was like more a different process because it is very close to my home. So it's in this sense is it was a bit easier to work on because I had it there and just go whenever I feel I'm ready or trained enough. On Silence it is harder also for this reason because it is in Norway, pretty far away. You can climb there not for very long during the year, maybe from July. Well, actually, I was there in May. So from May to the end of maybe mid-October, but during summer, sometimes it's very hot. So there are not very good conditions during maybe the July month or August month. So yeah, it's another project also because it's quite far from everything else, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so it sounds like you're going to be spending the next handful of months in Innsbruck training for the Olympic qualifications. Do you plan to train specifically for Silence? Will you have time to do that? And I'm curious, what are the limiting factors for you? What do you feel like you need to focus on to do Silence?
So I'm planning to train for the Olympic qualification and use this training for Silence. I will do some specific training, maybe on the later this year. But yeah, last trip, the problem was to get to the cracks fresh enough to be able to climb it because I climbed it starting from the cracks, and then I tried it from just a bit below. There's another not very hard boulder problem, but it is tiring. So it is complex. It is a mix of power and endurance, maybe power endurance, to be able to get to the rest before the crux one already rested. I know it is not logical, but the fresher I get to the knee bar rest, the better it is, because the knee bar is good, but at the same time, I cannot arrive there completely tired, because I cannot rest, like fully rest. If I get that I'm like 50% tired, I can get up to maybe 80%, but I need 100%, maybe 95% to climb the crux.
Yeah.
So yeah, the plan could be to get to the rest at maybe 80, 90%, be able to recover up to 95 and then climb the crux. This is what I was lacking last year, but I could climb the crux of silence towards the end of the trip. So I didn't have enough time to then focus on this part.
I'm a little surprised to hear that, because you're known for like this legendary endurance that you have. Is it a different style? What is it about the, how hard is it to get to the crux? Actually, I don't know that. Is it 8B or 8B plus or something?
Yeah, it's not that hard. It's 8B plus, and I could get there quite good. The problem is that I have good endurance on like routes that don't have like super hard cruxes, like bibliography. I was getting there, and then when I get on the, I did the first crux for the first time, then I could get to the top, because the second crux is a bit easier. But the problem on silence that is that when I get to the first crux, then there's like the hardest boulder that I ever climbed. So yeah. I need to get there like with all my energies. And even if I have good endurance, my power is not at its max, because I'm a bit tired. And then this is the problem that I had last year, and I think I can fix it this year. It's a lot about endurance, but it's also a lot about giving the max power after an 8B plus route.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Climbing. What is it? V15, 8C boulder or something?
Yeah. I never climbed a V15 actually, on like a real V15. And I climbed that crux and felt harder than anything that I climbed before, like on bouldering. And so, yeah, and Adam agreed, it is V15 probably. It's like the hardest boulder that I ever climbed. And I need to do it after climbing an 8B plus route.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is a challenge.
It's a 514A to a knee bar rest to a V15. Oh my gosh. And that's not it. Yeah. And then there's like another V13 and then another V10. And
yeah, it's
so crazy. Yeah. And we will be right back. This episode is brought to you by Crimpt. If you are psyched to level up your climbing in 2024, check out the Crimpt app. This is the most useful app I've seen when it comes to self-coached training for rock climbing. Crimpt has dozens of workouts that focus on all the different facets of climbing performance and training: strength, endurance, power, flexibility, you name it. You can find workouts for whatever you want to train, and they have been carefully crafted by world-class climbers and coaches. I did a really fun collaboration with Crimpt last year, and one of their featured playlists is a selection of workouts that I made for those of you who prefer to train on real rock. Emil Abrahamson also has a playlist to help you guys address common skill and strength gaps on the journey from V0 to V15. And Ryan Devlin over at the Struggle Podcast, who's a friend of the show, has a playlist for pumpy overhanging sport climbing as he chases his first 513 at the Red River Gorge. So you can find all of that and a lot more in the app. It really is a treasure trove of training information, and it will guide you every step of the way. So check out Crimpt. You can learn more and download the app by going to crimpt.com. That's crimpd.com to get started and download the Crimpt app for free. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you'll know that it's not just about climbing. It's also about getting to know people and learning from them. And it's about getting to know ourselves, because until we do that, it's really hard to know how to get where we want to go in our life, our romantic relationships, climbing, or anything. Therapy is all about deepening your self-awareness and understanding, because sometimes we don't know what we want or why we react the way we do until we talk through things. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. I've been going to therapy twice a month for the last year and a half through BetterHelp, and I cannot overstate how helpful it's been. It's helped me unpack some relationship baggage and learn from those experiences so I don't repeat the same patterns over and over. And now I'm in the healthiest relationship I've ever been in, and it's amazing. And I really do credit therapy for a lot of that growth. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I still use it, and it's perfect for my lifestyle. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge and without any awkwardness. It's super, super easy. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/nugget today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/nugget. And now back to the show. Where to go next? I have some questions about how you train your endurance because you're so well known for it. Let's jump into that. And then I kind of want to circle back to Excalibur in a little bit. But yeah, you're known for having this legendary endurance. And I watched the video that you did with Ollie Tor where they test you at Lattice. And you basically like broke the test, you know, like I don't think they'd ever seen numbers so high on the critical force test, which just speaks to how good your endurance is. And I wanted to talk to you about or ask you about two exercises that I've seen you do that I hadn't seen before. I thought they were both really interesting. So the first one, this is a long time ago, but I remember watching you doing circuits and you were actually wearing a harness with like a 10-foot piece of rope tied into your harness. And you'd set up quick draws on the spray wall and you were just climbing a long circuit and clipping. And I was surprised at that. I've never seen anyone else at your level do that. You know, like I've seen people do that to practice when they're new to lead climbing and practicing clipping, but you're already amazing at the skills of clipping bolts. Why do that? I'm curious, why do that versus just climbing normal circuits?
Basically, I think the best way to train endurance is doing normal routes in a gym, maybe, or even outside. The problem is that maybe sport climbing gyms are not accessible to everyone. And so even me in Arco, I don't have many routes to try. I have many on rocks, but in a normal gym, there are not many routes set for my level or from 8C to above. So I train a lot on circuits. The problem with circuits is that the climbing is different because you go up and down, right and left, and you actually spend less time on the wall compared to when you do routes. If you try to do 30 moves on a route, it will take more or less 5 minutes, 6 minutes. If you do that on a circuit, it could take even 2 minutes. Mm. It's much faster because you don't move your feet. You stay you are faster on moving hands. And so what I'm doing, clipping the quick throws, is not because I need to learn how to clip, but it's because it forces you to stop on a hold and do the move and clip that you do on routes. And this is training because it's helpful for training for endurance because you stay a lot more on the hand, on one hand when you clip. If you just keep doing the circuit, it would be too fast to be comparable to a normal route. This is why I do this kind of training. And maybe you were asking about this, a similar training that I'm doing. If you don't have a rope or a harness, you can do the same thing. You can just go every hole and stop for 3 or 4 seconds. And this is a bit forced because it doesn't come naturally. You need to think about it. But it is good for endurance because it's similar to what you do on a route. Mm. On a route, if you take the time every hole, like every second that you stay on a hole, you can see it's much longer than you expect it to be, because this you need to, like, to go to the next hole, then you need to move your feet, then you clip, so you stay maybe even like sometimes 10 seconds on a hold, and this is what you like, it gets you pumped. Mm-hmm. And so if you do a circuit and you don't have a rope and you don't have quick throws, and you stay even 4 seconds on every hold, and then move your feet and then move your hand and then stay 4 seconds again in the next position, it will be very, very pumpy, like way more pumpy than if you go faster on a normal circuit.
Yeah, you read my mind. This was the second one that I wanted to ask you about. So you're climbing a circuit, but you're pausing for like 4 seconds on every move. When do you pause? Is it as soon as you grab the next hold? Because you're not, you know, we've all seen the drill where you like lock and hover, like you're holding your hand above the hold before you grab it, but you're not doing that, correct?
It's similar.
It's similar, but you have both hands on and you're just freezing for 4 seconds before you do the next move?
Yeah, you have both hands on, then you move the feet, and then you start counting 4 seconds. So when you stay, it's even like on every hold, it's even more than 4 seconds. It's like you go, you count to four, then you move your hand, then you move your feet, and then you count to four. So it will be similar to what you do on an actual route, that you stay even more than like 4 seconds on every hold. Mm-hmm.
And how long is your circuit when you do this?
It could be between 20 to 30 moves, I think. So you stay maybe even up to 5 minutes. That could be like 4 to 5 minutes. That is much more similar than what you do on a circuit. If you just go and not stop, it will be much faster. And so, or maybe you can do like longer circuits, but then if you're setting like a 60-move circuit, you have to remember the holds. And it's even different, because when you climb on a route, you don't climb that fast and you stay much longer. It's slightly different.
And then the pacing of competition lead routes is a little bit different. It's usually a little faster than outdoor rock climbing. Do you train the same way for competitions, for lead competitions?
I try to train more on routes in competition. Yeah, the pace is a bit faster, but if I climb like on site, it is a bit slower than what you do on like a project that you know on rock. So yeah, it is faster, but at the same time, when you climb on a competition, you are on siting, and so I climb pretty slow actually. My style is to try to control and like take advantage of every rest that I find in a route. And so, yeah, it is a bit faster than like on rock, but at the same time, my style is not that fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it still applies for competitions, the style of training.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Do you have any other go-to workouts or exercises that have helped you build such amazing endurance?
Yeah, I actually, my endurance is pretty, it comes naturally. I don't know why it is inside me, but I also train it for sure. Like my best endurance will be like higher than average, but still I want like the best endurance I can have. And so I train even more with endurance, because I know it's very important for both rock projects or competitions. Another exercise that I do, not very often, but I do it when I don't have access to a climbing gym or even a small wall, it's possible to do it on a hangboard. And it's pretty classical. I didn't invent it. It's just something that my trainer gave me. And I think it's very good for endurance. You stay like 7 seconds on a hold with like on a crimp with two hands, hanging for 7 seconds, resting for 3 seconds, hanging for 7 seconds and resting for 3 seconds. And this loop for, I think, 2 or 3 minutes. I don't remember exactly. You can do based on your level. And this is like very pumpy. So even if you don't have a climbing wall, if you're maybe just in your van with a hangboard, or even outside with a portable hangboard on a tree, you can do this exercise.
Yeah, yeah, classic repeaters. That's great. Awesome. Let's go back to Excalibur. I have some more questions about that. I read somewhere that Excalibur is your proudest ascent to date. I wanted to ask why that is. It's a first ascent, so I'm guessing it's just because of that. But you've done 4 9B pluses now, Perfecto Mundo. You did the second ascent of Change in Flatzinger, Adam Anders route. You did the second ascent of Bibliography after Alex Magos. They all look, obviously I haven't tried any of them, but they all look brilliant. They all look like beautiful climbs. So does Excalibur. What was so special about Excalibur? Why is that your proudest?
Yeah, for sure is because it's a first ascent. It is also because it's very close to my home, and so I felt more connected with it in this way. But I think also because it felt the hardest of all the 9B plus that I climbed, and also because it could be considered not completely my style, because it's much shorter than everything else that I climb. It's like probably 12 meters. It's like a long boulder, actually. There are like boulders like even Alphain, I think, has more moves than Excalibur.
Wow.
And so, yeah, this is also why I'm proud of it, because it's not completely my style, but I invested some time in training for like max power and power endurance just for Excalibur. And at the end, I did it, and I like this power remained in me. And for this reason, then I tried Boulder of Dreams, because it was very well trained for Excalibur on max power, on like especially on like Cream's finger strength, and this helped me on my next goals, and on even goals that I didn't think they were like possible for me. And then, thanks to Excalibur and then the training that I did for Excalibur, I understood that I'm even stronger on something that I thought it wasn't that strong.
Mm. Yeah, that's really empowering. That's really cool. Well, I have a couple more questions about Excalibur, but you just mentioned Burden of Dreams, and I have to jump on that. Did that surprise you? It was really fun to see you try the replica with Will, and then, you know, you're sharing with your followers, like, if I reach this many followers, I'm going to fly to Finland and try the real thing. And I love some of your jokes. I mean, you're doing really well on the boulder, and it definitely looks like you can do it. But, you know, you're standing between like two boulders, and you've got your tiny little fan, and you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if the boulderers are letting me into their club. Did it surprise you how well you did on that one?
Yes. Even if I knew that I love Creams and I was training for Excalibur, I didn't expect to do so well on a 9A boulder, like Boulder of Dreams. Also because I never climb 8C, V15 and V16. I never climb any of them. I just climb 3 8B pluses. V14 is my best performance on boulder, actually, apart from the Crux of Silence, if we consider it as like a boulder.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was surprised, and it was unexpected to be able to climb all the moves on Boulder of Dreams, and even doing some very good links. I did it from the second move to the top, and it was it was very surprising. I did it like quite fast. This link went down quite fast, and like my biggest problem actually was the first move, and I didn't even know if I was able to do it because it was like probably the hardest move that I ever tried. And I actually did it on my last day on my first trip to Finland, and in that moment I understood that for me it was possible. It is possible to climb Burden of Dreams for me. And I just need time to invest on it. And maybe a bit more finger strength and power, but I was not that far, actually. It was unexpected.
Yeah. Does that change what you want to do in the future? Did that make you more curious about what you could do with bouldering if you focused on it?
Actually, I'm motivated for Burden of Dreams, but I'm more psyched for Roots. But it changed my perspective because even if I want to climb Roots more than boulders, I now know that I can like find some hard routes with like hard section on it, and I won't have problems, especially if the like the style is crimpy or something like this. Maybe something like La Dura Dura that always scared me because like the crux is very hard and it is about endurance, maybe on the second part, but first the main part for both Adam and Chris Sharma was the first crux. And now I know that maybe I can dare to try seriously something like this. I already did a couple of tries on La Dura Dura many years ago. I wasn't close to do the like all the moves on the boulder because maybe I wasn't thinking it was possible. But now with this power, or just with it knowing that I have this power that was hidden inside me, I now know that I can climb even hard boulders, but it's not something that I'm very psyched about, apart from Burden of Dreams, that I'm very psyched. Maybe my future will be on like roots, but not like endurance route, I can choose a style. I can choose the route, even if the style is something that is not something that I would climb maybe some years ago.
Yeah, that's awesome. It unlocks a lot of potential on roots, and maybe you'll find a crimpy project with like an 8C or an 8C plus on it someday and be able to do it. How hard is the boulder problem on La Dura Dura?
Oh, I don't know, actually. I think it could be 8C, I think, because it is different from Silence. Silence is harder, but also because the crux of Silence is not at the beginning. The crux of La Dura Dura is at the very beginning. So I think it could be even 8B plus, or even, I think it could be even 8C. I'm not sure. I'm thinking about it. And yeah, it could be 8C and then 8C root or something. Maybe I'm saying something wrong. I'm not sure. I need to check. But it could be as hard as Silence crux. The difference is that Silence is harder. It's 9C because the crux is way above the ground after an 8B plus, and like it is different to climb an 8C from the start or an 8C that is like even 20 meters above the ground after an 8B plus route.
Yeah, totally. That makes sense. Did doing so well on Burden of Dreams make you rethink how hard Excalibur was at all? I'm curious why you graded it 9B plus. It sounds like you were thinking it could be 9B plus, or it could even be 9C when you started trying it. Did doing so well on Burden make you rethink the grade at all?
I don't know. It's hard to say because at the beginning of when I tried Excalibur, it felt impossible. And then when I did the moves, I was thinking it could even be 9C. Then when Will Bosey came to try Excalibur, we figured out all the moves of the... Like, I already figured out all the moves on Excalibur, but I was missing just one piece of the puzzle. It was the first move. And as soon as he like explained me his beta that he was doing, I could even do like a very good attempt, and I was falling at the very top in that moment. So in that moment, I realized, oh, maybe it's not that hard, actually. Maybe it's just 9B or 9B plus. At some moment, I was thinking it was even 9B. But maybe then when I climbed the route and then I was trying Burden of Dreams, I realized, okay, it's for sure it's not 9B. It's much harder than 9B. It is 9B plus, at least maybe on the upper end of 9B plus. I don't know if it could be 9C. It is hard, and like maybe seeing Will Bosey struggling on it like this, or Adam Ondra struggling on some of the moves, made me think, okay, maybe it could be even harder. But I think for like being 9C, it has to be much harder than all the 9B plus that I climbed before. And even if it is harder than all the 9B plus, I don't think it's like a step forward. That's why I graded graded it 90 plus. But it could also be that silence could be harder than 90. Who knows? And maybe one day we will rethink about silence as a hard 90 and maybe Excalibur as a easy 90. It could be. It is not the most important thing, I think. The most important thing was the process, the project, the fact that we shared together everything with Adam, with Bozy, and just climbing the route was the most important thing. And then the difficulty of the route doesn't change if we just gave a different label. The difficulty of the route is that. And then the label that we have just below the route doesn't change the difficulty, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great way of thinking about it. And man, one of my favorite things that's come out of this kind of technology age that we live in is with all you guys having YouTube channels, is that we get to see all the best climbers in the world getting together and trying some of these hard routes together. I loved that you had Will Bozy and Adam Andra and Jakob come out and try this thing. And how helpful was that to see different people, different body sizes, different heights, different skills, trying the same route? How helpful was it to work on it with those guys?
I think it was crucial for me to be able to climb the route. Otherwise, I would probably be still there trying the route without them. This is something that I noticed when I bolted and climbed a route in Arco that is called Erebor, which I thought it was hard. Like, yeah, it is hard, but I thought it was harder. And then when some of the repeaters came and found new betas, and then they said, okay, I gave it 9B/plus. And then they said, okay, maybe it's 9B because they found this new beta. There I realized, okay, if I try something hard, I want to try with someone else from the first moment, because if I knew this beta on Erebor from the first moment, I would have climbed the route many days, even months before, and then I could focus on something else. But I was just by myself finding the betas. Then I climbed the route. Then Adam and Laura Rogora came and repeated the route with different betas. And then if I knew those betas, maybe I could have climbed the route even before. So when I tried Excalibur, I thought, okay, I don't want to make the same mistake that I did with Erebor. I don't want to spend my whole... It's even harder than Erebor for sure, and I don't want to spend years trying something and then figure out a new beta, an easier beta, and think about, okay, I should have done this way before. So from the first day, I decided, okay, I want to share everything with everyone that wants to try the route. Even if I'm risking to give away the first ascent, actually, it was a risk because I could have... I haven't bolt the route, so I couldn't keep it for me if the bolters want to invite it, someone else to try it. But I could have tried the route without say anything to anyone. But I decided to share and invite people to try it because I wanted to have the best experience on it in terms of method, in terms of even going there and trying the route. It's more fun if you can share it with more people that can try the route with you. Going there just by myself or with someone that can just belay, because there's nothing else actually there. So it is then someone else bought another route on the same spots, but it came later. So being there just by myself trying the route would have been way less fun than trying it with Adam Andra and Will Bozy. And maybe someone can think that I'm crazy because I had this project and that I wanted to do the first ascent, and I called Adam Andra and Will Bozy to try it with me, to try my project. It could have seemed like a craziness, but at the end it was the key to climb the route for sure.
No, I think it's beautiful. I think it's just a really just a really healthy mindset, I think, and a healthy approach. And it's really cool to hear that, you know, the experience that you want to have on the route is more important than just doing it first. It feels more collaborative. It just feels more positive for climbing. I think it's really cool. It's, you know, it's really similar to Adam Ondra inviting Jakob to try BIG. You know, he bolted it. He wanted to do it. He was getting really close and Jakob ends up doing it first. And I think that's really cool. You know, I have a lot of respect for you for doing that. I have a lot of respect for Adam for doing that with BIG. And it's also really fun for the rest of us. It's so interesting to watch all these amazing climbers who are all different and kind of have different strengths and weaknesses, trying the same really hard cutting edge moves and talking about it and breaking it down. It's really fun. So yeah, I admire you for doing it. I really appreciate it. I think it's really cool. And you did it first.
Yeah, thank you.
You got the first ascent, so cherry on top.
Yeah. It was not the most important thing, but at the end, also the fact that I'm here closer to the route was a bit of an advantage for me. But then Will came even after my first ascent, and he struggled on a move. And even seeing Will then repeating some of the hardest boulder in the world, like Burner of Dreams, that it went down pretty fast, and then like recently the return of Zip Walker, then made me think, okay, Excalibur is hard, because if even Will was struggling on this and he climbed like the Sleepwalker, the stand start, in 3 days, then it means, okay, Excalibur can be like much harder than this.
Mm.
And so this is something I'm proud of, because not because Will is struggling, but I hope he will climb it very soon, Excalibur, but because it is something that it took me some times, and it is definitely hard, and it was like satisfying to be able to climb it, not because it was the first, but because I was able to climb it. Even if I was second after Adam or after Will, it would be the same. It would be just as amazing. Without them, it would be impossible, I think, to climb, or it could have been like such a long process that I could have just gave up after maybe 1 or 2 years. Mm-hmm. It could be frustrating sometimes. Having someone to share it and to be able to share the betas and like just moments at the crag actually was really fun and very important for the whole process.
Yeah, that's very cool. I loved the video where your friend's trying the other route at the same crag and you both end up getting the earring and you have to wear the sword earring until you both send your projects. Did you secretly love the earring? I know Sarah didn't like it and she was excited for you to send so you could stop wearing it, but did you secretly like the sword earring?
I didn't like the aesthetic of the ring, of the earring, but I liked the fact that it was actually helping me to think about the process and the project, because I had it here, it was hanging, it was like, I could feel it. Even while sleeping, I could feel it if I move my head. And so every time I move my head, I had Excalibur like pointing here and like telling me, you have to climb this route. You have to climb this route. And so like on every training, I was pulling hard to be able to climb the route and get rid of this earring finally. And so it was actually helping. It was like a reminder of my goal, something that was there and was reminding me, you have to climb this. You want to climb this, and this is a reminder. Mm. It is there, always with you. So it was fun. It was something even that made the experience even better.
What did you do with it after you took it out? Did you save it?
Yeah. I have in a closet, in a drawer, and I'm keeping there for I don't know. It's just a good memory. And
yeah.
I was thinking about wearing it sometimes, but maybe Sarah is not that happy.
Yeah. And then tell me about the sword at the base of the root. I am so curious about that. Was that already there? And is that how Excalibur got its name? Or did you put it there in honor of this root?
No, the sword was already there. And it is part of a open-air gallery, art gallery that is around the wood in that place. There are many of these pieces of art in around the wood, and Excalibur, like the sword is one of these. And I think it's like it's one of the best because it's like this sword in an anvil on this piece of rock, and it was very cool. And then it like just came naturally trying the route and telling like, oh, I'm going to try Excalibur because it's just there under, like the route is just over this sword. And then the route became Excalibur for this reason. And I think it was pretty cool. Like, and it like saved me from thinking about the name, but sometimes yeah. It's not easy to find.
Yeah.
And like the name came like even the day that I tried the route on the very first day, actually. Remember, I had this folder on my PC with the first pictures that I had on the first day, and I didn't know how to call it and just call it Excalibur. And then the name was there, was already there from the first days.
I love that. I love when a route's name has a good story behind it. And yeah, that one's perfect. I love it.
Yeah, like Megatron.
Like Megatron, yeah, the frozen gecko in the fridge or in the freezer.
Yeah, yeah.
And we will be right back. This episode is brought to you by Madrock. I'd heard a lot about the drones on this podcast from guests like Matt Foltz, Emil Abrahamson, and Ethan Pringle, who all swear by these shoes. And I finally got to try the drones in 2023. And the hype is real. I immediately fell in love with the Drone CS, especially. That's their comp version, which is a little softer. And I sent all of my hardest outdoor boulders in 2023 while wearing the Drone CS. I wore them almost exclusively in Magic Wood and Rocklands over the summer. I got to test them on a wide variety of climbs, and I'm a huge fan. I just got my second pair of the Drone CS, and now I'm testing the Drone 2.0. The Drone 2.0 is a huge upgrade from the original, in my opinion. They feature all of the things I love about the Drone CS, but they're just a little stiffer and more supportive. You can really drive into small footholds and edges with the Drone 2.0. And I'm really excited to test both of these shoes here in Waco Tanks over the next 2 months. And I will let you all know how that goes. I'm super stoked. I would recommend the Drone CS if you like a softer, more sensitive shoe. And I'd recommend the Drone 2.0 if you want a slightly stiffer shoe that can really claw into small footholds on hard climbs. Both of these shoes are amazing for toe hooking. They both feature the Edge Heel, which is clutch for heel hooking on small crimps and edges. I'm a huge fan of both. Head over to madrock.com and enter code NUGGET for 10% off your first order. That's madrock.com and code NUGGET for 10% off your first order. This episode is brought to you by Fizzy Vantage. I'm guessing a lot of you listen to this podcast because you want to get better at climbing, right? You want those training nuggets. You want to send your proj. Well, guess what? There's only one climbing-specific pre-workout on the market, and that's Sendure X from Fizzy Vantage. Sendure X is a rare non-caffeinated pre-workout. Most pre-workouts are all about a big caffeine hit, but not this one. Many pro climbers like to steer clear of excessive caffeine because of the jitters and anxiety it can cause, which is not helpful if you're trying to send your proj. Sendure X active ingredients, beetroot extract and citrulline malate, work by increasing circulation and oxygen kinetics. There's a ton of research showing the value of these substances for improving power endurance in repeated sprint sports and aerobic capacity in many endurance events. Most climbers genuinely feel a difference when consuming Sendure X. I think this stuff is especially helpful for pumpy sport climbing, but even if you're a boulderer, you're occasionally going to try a long boulder and you're gonna get pumped, and you'll get less pumped with Sendure X. So check it out. If you would like to feel the Fizzy Vantage, head over to fizzyvantage.com and use code NUGGET15 at checkout to save 15% off any full-priced nutrition product. That's NUGGET15 at checkout, and you can find a direct link to this coupon right there in your podcast app. And now, back to the show. You mentioned Will Bosey. So I don't know if you know this, but I interviewed him about Return of the Sleepwalker yesterday. I actually just released a short episode.
Oh, I didn't know. Whoa.
Talking about that with him yesterday. And I told him that I was going to be talking to you. And he has two questions for you. The first one.
Okay.
Did you get psyched to come back to Raventour when you visited the UK last month?
Yes. I'm psyched. I was there for sure, the North Face event, and I had time to try Hubble. That was my goal, but the weather was quite bad, and it's not easy to find the route dry. I actually tried the route 10 years ago in 2014, but I think at that time I wasn't strong enough to do it fast. I'm psyched to go back to Raventour for first Hubble for sure, and maybe some harder projects from Will. I know there are some like really hard projects, like hard routes that he climbed. For those, maybe I would need more time, and it's not easy because like Death Crag is very, very hard to find it dry. So as soon as Hubble is dry, maybe I could go there and try to climb it as fast as possible before it gets wet again. And but I'm psyched. It's something after climbing Action Direct, the first 9A in the world, I'd like to try and do Hubble, even to compare it, because someone thinks Hubble is the first 9A in the world because they said it's like harder than other 8C pluses. So I'm curious. At that time when I tried it, I had a lot of experience. Now that I have more experience, I'm curious to try it. I'm curious to climb it. Maybe with both the knee pad and without the knee pad would be interesting, because cool. I know that there's with the knee pad it could be easier, but then when Ben Mood did the first ascent, there were no knee pads, so I want to climb it without knee pad to be part of the history. I want to climb a piece of history as I did on Action Direct. Mm. And maybe then old Stefano could tell a story about Hubble.
I hope so. I can't wait. I loved your video about Action Direct with old Stefano telling us all the history of the route. And I think that's really cool. I think it's awesome that you're trying to push the sport forward and you know, trying some of the hardest routes in the world, but you're also, it seems like you find it important to go back in time and kind of revisit history and be a part of that history and see how hard these routes were that came so long ago. You mentioned in that video that you were going to go try Hubble next, and I think it's awesome that you're following through with it. I think it's really cool that you're going to try to climb it without the knee bar too. And it's awesome to be able to, I think you say this in your video, but that's what's so special about climbing. Like, in what other sport can you actually go have the exact same experience as these legends that came before us and paved the way for us? Like, how cool is it to be able to go feel the holds on Hubble and be like, wow, this is what Ben Moon did all those years ago, and really experience it. It's so cool.
It is, I don't know, something like playing basketball with Michael Jordan. I don't know. You can like try the same routes that that they did after so many years, and this is incredible. And like recently I've been in the schoolroom on the 50 board. It is like the board where they used to train, where actually Ben Moon is still training there. And so it's the board where you can see some of the boulders in the film, the real thing. I tried some of the of those boulders, and it is even weirder on a board, because usually on a board you can change the holes and you cannot try the boulders that someone else tried 30 years ago. In this case, I was able to climb and try some of the boulders that they tried. Even if some of the holes like broke, they tried to rebuild them, make it the same. And so I had like a similar, if not the same, experience that they had. And was very fun, and it was like a very deep experience trying those boulders. I tried them with Jim Pope, a young climber from UK.
Yeah,
and a video will come out about this. It was really fun, and this is one of the best things about climbing. And even on Rocky, it's even easier, because like almost every route you can try like in the same condition that you like 30 years ago, even 40 years ago, they climb it. And so you can be in some ways part of this history. If you add your name on the list of the repeaters of Hubble or Action Direct, you're just in the same list as Wolfgang Gulisch or Ben Moon. This is crazy. I love to do more of this in the future and to like discover many of the historical routes around the world.
Mm. So you're a kid growing up in Italy. You start climbing at 11. Who were your climbing heroes? Did you look up to Wolfgang or Ben Moon, or did you find out about those guys later on? Who were you looking up to early on in your climbing?
No, I actually found about like every rock climbing legends a bit later in the future. When I grew up and when I started climbing, I didn't even know who were like the strongest climber were, even like the like World Cup winners. I wasn't following like the main scene in climbing. I was just focused on my local competition. And for me, that was all. There was like all my climbing world, my goals, my small goals, and my competitions in Italy were everything. And I didn't even know. And it was maybe harder to follow at that time. There was like, there were no YouTube. There were some like films or something, but the main thing was on the climbing magazine. So it wasn't as easy as today, but just open your phone, like turn on your phone and write climbing on YouTube and you can see everything. It was a bit different. But then when I started rock climbing, that happened actually a few years after I started climbing. Then I started trying to repeat like the hardest routes, harder and harder, like every time. And then I start figuring out that there were like legends in climbing that climbed these routes many years before me. And so I got more into the history of climbing, but just probably from 5 to 10 years after I started climbing.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. I don't need to talk about myself. But I can relate. I started climbing at 18 years old. I was a bit older. And so I can really distinctly remember the first, you know, pictures in magazines. Or for me, it was, I think the first film that I saw that kind of blew my mind was the Chris Sharma film, King Lines. Did you ever watch that one?
Yeah. I remember it was one of the first for me too. Mm. Yeah, for sure. It was one of the first climbing movie together with the Dosage, maybe.
Dosage.
Was, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like
one of the dozers.
Wow, people have been doing this forever. People are doing things that I can't even comprehend. I don't even know what I'm seeing right now, and that kind of set me on my path. So that's really fun.
For me, was similar. And actually, I discovered about these movies when I was already training and maybe competing. So, like, my goal was, okay, I can try these routes. Maybe one day will be fun. Maybe I want to be like this strong and go try this route like biography or Espontas. Maybe I never tried it, but maybe in the future could be interesting.
Did you have a moment where you realized, because this is very different for me, you know, I'm still trying to climb my first V12 hopefully this year, and I've come a lot further than I ever thought I would, but I'm not, you know, I'm not watching any of these movies thinking like I'm going to climb Espontas someday. Did you have a moment where you realized like, wow, I'm one of those guys now. I'm one of those people. I'm like at the top of the sport. Did that ever, do you think of it that way? Did it hit you like that at some point in your climbing?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe it could be when I climbed the Menchia Senil in Margalef, because it was like the Menchia Senil was one of these routes that as videos, like there's a Iker Puu video or Chris Sharma video. And before that, I just climbed, I think, a couple of 9As, but more in my local area. So it was something that was not that popular. It was like a 9A from Alberto Nierro that was, it is like an Italian legend, but like 9A, that 9A was not that popular. And another one in Rome that was then downgraded, it's called Grandi Gesti. So when I start trying and then I climb quite fast the Menchia Senil, there I realized, okay, maybe I can try even harder, because it was my It was my second 90 plus. I climbed first another 90 plus that was not that famous. It was one in France. But when I climbed the Mont Chassenil, maybe it was a moment that I realized, okay, I saw this route on a video, then I climbed it even like much faster than expected. I can climb some of the hardest routes in the world now. I can be ready. And then this is what I did. The next goal was biography in Seus, another 90 plus. And then I tried, like, since that moment, I tried to climb the hardest like routes in the world. And maybe there, in that moment, I realized, yeah, maybe I can actually climb this route that I saw in these videos.
Oh, that must have been so exciting. I remember that one. Is that the one, Dimension of Sunil? It's in Margalef. It's really short and it starts with a bunch of campus moves on pockets and it's just really short and powerful.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Man, that must have been so exciting. Like, wow. The hardest ones, I can go try all of them. Whatever's out there, I can go try the hardest routes. That must have been really cool.
Like, it opened a world for me. Mm. Okay, there are like 100 of these kind of routes that I can try. It was amazing.
I have one more question from Will. This is total random topic, but I think it's kind of funny. What is your Fortnite rank?
Oh, I haven't played Fortnite since last time we came in Arco. We played together and I'm not as strong as Will in this game, because I remember Will was playing Fortnite for the first time on Sean Rabotu's phone in my house here, and he won that game, the very first game he played, and it was crazy because he was, oh wow, this guy is strong, not only in bouldering, not only in Fortnite, also in this guy is strong also on Fortnite. And then we played a couple of games together with Will and Sean, and we actually won some of the games, but I'm not as strong as Will. And Sean is quite strong too, but not as strong as Will in Fortnite.
Oh, I love that. I love describing video game skills as strength. That's really awesome. Are you a gamer?
Yeah, similar to climbing.
Do you have any go-to games?
Yeah, I like to play some casual games on the. I have a Switch, a Nintendo Switch, and more like fun and relaxing game. Sometimes I play Fortnite, but maybe more during COVID when we were forced to stay home. Then I became more of a gamer. But it's something that I do for fun and for relax. Actually, it's not like competing really hard. Like, I know Jakob Schubert is a hardcore gamer too. I think maybe of this, like, the strong climbers are.
He said that I asked him who was better at Mario Kart, you or him, and he said that he is. Do you agree?
Yeah, he is. We played in Flatangere. I think I won once, but he was winning like more times. Yeah, I still need to beat Jakob in Mario Kart, and Will in Fortnite would be like the best goal that I have. The hardest ones. Harder than silence, maybe.
Amazing. I love that photo of you and Jakob. You're both just zoned in, so focused.
Very
serious. It's great. There's one more topic I want to talk to you about here that I have on my list. And we've mentioned your partner, Sarah, quite a few times. Another thing I really admire about you is you've shared some of her health struggles over the years and supporting her in her struggles. And I just think it's so cool that you're a professional climber climbing some of the hardest routes in the world, trying to make the Olympics. And, you know, you're so focused, you're professional, you're doing your thing, but then you're also taking the time and energy to support your partner as she's struggling through some health stuff and has been for a long time. And I don't know the name of her illness. I was reading about it a little bit, and it sounds like she found out that she had a chronic illness where her immune system is attacking her kidneys. And this is like, she found this out 16 years ago or something. It's been a long time, right?
Yes. When I met her, she was on dialysis. That it means that she had to go 3 times per week in the hospital for 4 hours each time, basically there was a machine that was doing the job of, instead of her kidneys, that they weren't working. And so, when I met her, she was actually on dialysis, But then I fell in love with her, and this wasn't something that prevented me to I wanted to know her better, and then we fell in love, and then we moved together. And this was a condition that was she had for 6 years, and she already had it for 2 years before she knew me. And so, like, for 4 years, our life was forced to follow also this rhythm, and not just my climbing and the project rhythms. And so after like 4 years in 2018, she was transplanted, and she now has like a kidney transplanted. And so this made our life better, because now we can travel more freely, and even like go for months in our van. And it was like something that was life changing for like, especially for her, but also for my lifestyle, our lifestyle together.
That's beautiful. And did that resolve her issue? Like, she got the kidney transplant. Does she still deal with that autoimmune condition?
Yes, she actually, now she has to take a lot of medicine to keep the kidney working. It is not a definitive solution, because like the kidney is working now. We work for it worked for 6 years. We work for maybe some other years, but like it's not, could be not forever. So we will be a time maybe where she need to do the dialysis again, and maybe another kidney transplant. So it is a temporary solution, and we don't know actually how long it will last. It could be like years, or even maybe 30 years, like if it's good. So yeah, but we're enjoying these moments, and we tried not, like she tries not to think about it very much. And the freedom that she has now made her like enjoying and be like very thankful about these trips and everything we do, even better.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, what an intense way to start a relationship. You're getting to know each other, and for the first 4 years, she's having to go 3 times a week to get dialysis, and lots of time in the doctor or the hospital. What was that like for you? What was that experience like for you?
I like, maybe for some people could have been a problem, but I'm the fact maybe that first I fell in love with her, so I didn't care if she was like she couldn't travel or something. We tried to did everything together anyway, and like the fact that I'm a professional climber also helps, because I can adjust my trainings and my trips as I wanted. So I could like adjust my trips and my projects and my travels even according to her rhythm sometimes. But then she always supported me, even during the dialysis. We find some places where she could do dialysis in like in some of the places we wanted to go. Like for one period, we also learned how to do the dialysis at home. And so she was doing it at home, and we could do some travels also thanks to this small machine that we could bring to some, like we brought it to Margalef and to some other places in Spain where I was trying some of the hardest routes, and she was keep doing this. And it was hard for her, because it is like, it was a hard period of her life, but she was like happy to travel, and she like fought a lot against this illness. And then finally she have now a transplant that she's like doing much better now.
Mm. Was she climbing through that whole chapter?
Yes. And this is something that helped her a lot, like fighting this illness, because some people in her condition are, maybe you're more keen to stay home and you're tired, you want to just relax. But she really liked climbing, and was using climbing to take her life back and fight her illness. So climbing was something that was very helpful for her. She always says that climbing is her medicine, and she uses it for because it's, she likes it, but also to fight something like heart disease like hers.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful that you two have been able to support each other as much as you have. Like, I've seen her support you so much on some of your projects, you know, something like Excalibur, where you're going there day after day, and sometimes you're climbing with these other, you know, these other guys that are also trying the route, but a lot of time it's her belaying you. And yeah, I love that you always basically have like an appreciation post for Sara every time you send a route. You know, it's like a picture of the two of you together, and you tell her how much you love her and how thankful you are for her support.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
And it's so cool that you've been able to support her through her health journey. What did that look like on some of her hard days? Like, how did you support her on the days when she was having a really hard time?
Yeah, it's hard because there was nothing that I could really do for supporting her, because other than like driving her and taking her to the hospital, it was more being there and just be close to her during those days, and also being like in this like few months period, the possibility to help her to do the dialysis away from home was like, she couldn't do it by herself. She needed someone to be there and connect the machine and everything. So this was one of my ways to support her, and then support her even in climbing. She was belaying me, but she was also climbing. So we always try to find a place where, for sure, maybe the goal was for me to climb like the hardest route, but most of the time, or if not always, there was something even for her to climb. Like this year, she struggled more, not like with the health, but on finding some projects in Flatanger, because she doesn't like very much the style. So we tried to go also in some other crags like Hell, which is like a couple of hours away from Flatanger. And so we drive back and forth to be both able to climb our projects.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, that's really beautiful. Someone asked, I know this is kind of a difficult question, but I got a question for you about Sara and her health issues. And this person said that, you know, they really respect you for the way that you've supported her through difficult times while maintaining a professional career. However, did you ever feel like this affected your progress in climbing? I was curious about that.
Oh, yeah, it affected my progress, but in a positive way. Without Sara, I could have even think to try and maybe stay months in a place trying silence or change, because like she could support me, and now she has a job that she can do like remotely, so she can follow me, she can climb, she can belay, and she can work even from the crag. So yeah, like think it, I was affected by like her, but just in a positive way. Without her, would be much harder to climb many of the hardest routes that I climbed.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing all of that. I was curious about that, and it's been really fun to just see like the outpouring of love and appreciation between the two of you. It really comes through, and it's beautiful to hear how she talks about you in some of your videos, and it's great to see her climbing and healthy, and I just wish the best for her. I hope that she continues to have great health, and
oh, thank you.
I hope this kidney lasts for many, many decades to come. So
thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Stefano, I'm sorry. I realized this morning that I've been pronouncing your name wrong for a long time. Stefano, not Stefano.
Stefano. Yeah, it is Stefano, but sometimes when I talk in English, or when I call myself old Stefano, it is like a joke. So it's cool anyway.
Okay. That's perfect. You have been an absolute delight. I've really loved talking to you. You're an inspiring guy and an inspiring climber, and I just love that you keep things fun for the rest of us. It's truly a wonderful combination. So I wish you the best on your projects. I wish you the best with the Olympic qualifications and your training. I hope it all goes well. We're going to jump into some listener questions here in a bit, but before I let you go here, let people know where they can find you, where they can follow along with your climbing and see what you're up to.
Oh, yeah, it is pretty easy. You can find me on Instagram. My name is Teghizo. Or YouTube. Maybe YouTube is something that I'm invested more time lately. So just Stefano Ghisolfi is my channel. I almost get 100,000 followers. And when I get to that, I will publish the uncut video of Excalibur. So if you can subscribe, that would be great. And we also have a present for a subscribe. So it would be great.
Nice. Nice. Awesome. I will link to your Instagram and your YouTube channel in the show notes for everyone listening at thenuggetclimbing.com. Be sure to check that out and give him a follow and a subscribe. Thank you again, Stefano. Really appreciate it. And it's been awesome talking to you. Hope you guys all enjoyed that. And for patrons, be sure to stick around. I've got a bunch of great questions from you guys covering a bunch of topics that we haven't touched on yet. I think it'll be fun to dig into those. So we're going to do a little extra. Yeah, so patrons, stick around. The rest of you, thanks again for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Hey friends, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Stefano as much as I did. We ended up talking for another 40 minutes and it was really fun. We answered a bunch of your questions covering many, many topics. We talked about BIG and DNA, two of the other 9 Cs in the world, and his thoughts on them and his thoughts on whether he wants to try them or not. We talked about trying Alphane and his plans to return to Burden of Dreams. We talked about his YouTube career and how his YouTube channel has progressed and what that process has looked like. And my favorite part of this whole thing, I got a chance to sit down and interview Old Man Stefano. If you have been following his YouTube channel, you'll know what I'm talking about. It was so much fun. Old Man Stefano makes an appearance and I got to ask him some questions about his life. And it was really beautiful, actually. He shared some really insightful thoughts. And it was a lot of fun. So be sure to check that out. If you can't get enough of the podcast and you want 40 more minutes with Stefano, that bonus episode is available right now for patrons who support The Nugget for $5 per month or more. Think of it as buying me a beer after an especially good episode. It's no big deal. It's not that much money, but it really adds up quick. I could not do the show without the support from all my patrons. It really makes a world of difference. And I would really appreciate your support. So be sure to go check that out at patreon.com/thenuggetclimbing. You can listen to bonus stuff on the Patreon app, and you can also listen to all of the bonus episodes and the full podcast ad-free on Spotify. The patron show is on Spotify. It's really slick. And for this bonus episode, I threw the video on Spotify as well, so you can see me chatting with Old Man Stefano. So be sure to check that out. Once again, patreon.com/thenuggetclimbing. I really appreciate your support. All right, much love, and we'll see you next time. No one can do it like we do it, like we do it, like we do it, 'cause no one can.